I thought it might be useful for us just to have a very, very quick whiz about what we've been looking at so far, just to sort of feed us back into to Mark. Mark starts his account of Jesus' public ministry by outlining his mission trips and how he, Jesus, was gaining a reputation as a preacher and because he was performing miracles. And we also know that he was beginning to upset the established church leaders and teachers. And we know that part of his mission plan was to appoint disciples, which he's already done by the time we reach chapter 6. And the chapter that we're looking at tonight, or part of tonight, is chapter 6. And it opens up as we find him in Nazareth, where he and his family had their home. And perhaps unsurprisingly, when he'd started teaching in the synagogue there, people had questioned who this upstart son of a carpenter thought he was. But far from discouraging him, opposition seemed to give him a renewed vigour and determination. And so he sent the disciples out in pairs to evangelise. And that was the beginning of their ministry in his name. Well, the plans began to work and his reputation was spreading. And even at the highest level, it reached the palace of King Herod, who was scared stiff when he heard about Jesus, because he'd wondered if Jesus was, in fact, John the Baptist resurrected from the dead. He was thinking, of course, of John who'd been beheaded at his command. And at the other end of the social scale, down from the palace, ordinary people had started to follow round after Jesus and his group, a bit like modern pop fans do. Only in this case, what people wanted wasn't a concert, but they wanted to be healed. And we pick up the story just after one of those mass open-air meetings. The disciples were evidently completely exhausted by the mission trips, and so Jesus hurried them into a boat in order to take them off to a remote place for a bit of peace and quiet and R&R. But the people, and there were about 5,000 of them by this time, foiled that plan by rushing round on foot to the place where they knew the boat had landed. And it was then that Jesus performed the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. And it was after that he bundled the disciples back into the boat and sent them on ahead. He sent them right over the other side of the lake, where it was going to be much more difficult for the people to follow him. It was about 5 miles from one side to the other. And so off they went in their boat. And that brings us on to our reading for this evening.
Which is Mark chapter 6, from verse 45. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars, because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out, because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret and anchored there. As soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus. They ran throughout the whole region and carried those who were ill on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages, towns, or countryside, they placed those who were ill in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, this story is, of course, about two miracles, if you think about it. And I wonder which you think is the bigger of the two. The first was, of course, that Jesus was able to walk on the surface of the water. And the second was that he had the power to stop a storm in full blast. Well, actually, of course, they're both equally spectacular. But I think it's fair to say that the miracle of Jesus walking on the water is probably his most famous miracle of all. I mean, it's not for nothing that cynical people of all faiths and none still mock others today who've got a tendency to show off by saying, look at him, look at her. What do they think they are? They're going to walk on the water next, aren't they? Clearly, walking on the water seems to be universally acknowledged as being supernatural, something you can't fake, and something which is far beyond the abilities of ordinary men and women like you and me. Well, what happened that night is recorded in 3 out of the 4 Gospels. It's here in Mark, and it's in Matthew, and it's in John. And although there are 3 different recollections of that evening, and we all know in the words of the late Queen that recollections may vary, there are no contradictions between the accounts. There are different insights to give us a really rounded picture of what happened, but no contradictions. I mean, for instance, Matthew, as well as telling us about Peter getting out of the boat, is also the one to emphasise the ferocity of the storm and the strength of the wind. It's Mark who tells us that the boat was in the middle of the lake when all this happened. And John goes into more detail about why Jesus was keen that he and his disciples should escape from the crowd. The people were by this time attempting to kidnap him by force so that they could take him and make him king. And that would have been the wrong sort of king at the wrong sort of time. And as we look at the story as it's told by Mark, it's worth reminding ourselves about the author of Mark's Gospel, which was, of course, John Mark. John Mark would have been no more than a teenager at the time of Jesus' public ministry, no more than a teenager at this time. However, we know from Acts that Mark later came on to be regarded with great affection by Peter. And it's thought that most of the material in his Gospel came from Peter, which is why I find it surprising that the story about Peter getting out of the boat and walking on the water towards Jesus isn't included here in this gospel. I can only think that Peter had an attack of modesty when he was telling Mark all about that night. But the point is that Matthew, Mark and John give us 2 first-hand witness accounts and 1 reported at first hand. And they all mention that all the disciples saw Jesus walking on the water. There can be no reasonable, sensible doubt that this happened in real time and was witnessed by real people. This is no made-up story. It's not difficult to imagine the scene from the point of view of the disciples. As Jesus had sent them off, we know that they were tired and they were in need of a bit of R&R. And they probably weren't best pleased to be sent off late in the day for a long row across the lake. And as I imagine the scene a few hours later, I can almost hear the grumbling going on between them. It was cold. They were drenched through and they were heaving on the oars against overwhelming waves and the wind was in the wrong direction. And since it was Jesus who'd sent them out on their journey, I'll bet his name was Mud by that time. After all, if he was so clever, wouldn't he have known that the danger was facing them? And wouldn't he have kept them safe on the shore? But just maybe what Jesus was doing was teaching both them and us a serious lesson. Obedience to his orders is no guarantee of being spared trouble. Nowhere in the Bible, well, nowhere that I can think of, certainly, does God promise us freedom from adversity. Freedom from adversity because we follow him. But there are lots and lots and lots of times when we're promised he'll be right alongside us to support us through adversity when it comes. But for all the promises, both Scripture and the testimony of Christians over the subsequent centuries show us that too often it takes extreme circumstances to hit us before we turn to God. He's always there. But he leaves the initiative to us to call on him. And there's no better catalyst for that than when we get into trouble or danger. You'll have heard that old saying about soldiers under heavy artillery bombardment. There are no atheists in foxholes. Well, the disciples weren't atheists. But we can wonder whether they'd yet fully grasped who Jesus was and whether they'd yet got a complete understanding of his command over things. I mean, certainly they'd seen him performing miracles. They'd seen him performing loads of healing miracles. They'd seen him at the time when Jairus, the synagogue leader, had asked Jesus to help when his little daughter was ill. And Jesus had brought Jairus' daughter back to life. And then just earlier that day, they'd seen him perform the miracle of feeding 5,000 people. But still, Mark tells us, the penny hadn't fully dropped for them about who Jesus is and the fact that he has power over creation, the sort of power which has never been seen in a human before nor since. Mark simply tells us that their hearts were hardened. But now, it seems, was the moment when Jesus judged, well, now's the time I'm going to get them to grasp my real identity. Now was the time that he was going to get the penny to drop for these disciples. I do feel sorry for the disciples so often because their story is down to be criticised and hauled over 2,000 years, and people say, oh, aren't they stupid? They should have understood. But they're human just like us, and if we're honest, when life gets hard and when we're tired and when we're hungry and when we're disappointed, when we're doubting, how often do we fail to see Jesus? How often is he right there in the middle of a situation and we fail to see him? How often do we look back and talk about, oh, it was a wonderful coincidence what happened, or that was a lucky outcome, or I'm so grateful that other people were there when we've been helped out of a tricky spot. But we failed to see Jesus in that situation. How often is it that we benefit from the actions of human benefactors when we eat the produce which has been grown by farmers? Or when we get better because of the dedication of doctors? I mean, do we see other people as instruments of God and as marks of grace for us? Or do we leave him out of the equation? Jesus thought that it was time for the penny to drop for the disciples. At what point does the penny drop for us that Jesus is right in the middle of our situations and all we need to do is turn to him? All of us, I suspect, wanted a God who'd give them an easy life by keeping them out of trouble and saving them from danger. Maybe the God we dream about might do that. But here's a lesson that the God who actually is neither keeps us from trouble nor saves us from danger. What he does do, though, is to share our journeys and to walk with us through the bad times as well as the good. Surely, he'd said, surely I am with you always to the very end of this age. And so we come, at long last I hear you cry, to the point when, just before dawn, Jesus walks across the lake. And Mark tells us that he was about to pass them by when they saw him and they thought he must be a ghost. Now, I don't want to kid you for one moment that I claim to know any Greek. I don't. But I do have quite a few books that help me understand what's going on. And let me quote from one of my favourites, which you may have come across. It's called, If You Want to Walk on Water, You've Got to Get Out of the Boat. And it's by a guy called Randy Alcorn. And I really, really recommend it as a very good read. John and I were trying to remember earlier. We think we first came across it shortly after it was published in 2001. And it's worth reading and rereading. It's a good book. Very American, but it's a good book. And here's what he says. He says, what was Jesus up to walking on the lake at 3 o'clock in the morning? There's a clue in Mark's version of this story when he tells us that Jesus was about to pass them by. But when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought it was a ghost. Now, why did Jesus want to pass them by? I mean, had he decided to race them? Did he want to impress them with a really neat trick? The verb par ekomai, I asked earlier and then I forgot, par ekomai, is used in the Greek translation of the Old Testament as a technical term, which refers to another technical term, which is a theophany. And a theophany is those defining moments when God makes a striking and only temporary but earthly appearance to a select individual or a group for the purpose of communicating a message. For example, remember how in the story of the burning bush, God puts Moses in a cleft in a rock so that Moses would be protected and see God while my glory passes by. The Lord passed before Moses. And God told Elijah to stand on a mountain, for the Lord is about to pass by. There's a pattern in these stories. In each case, God had to get people's attention. And he did it through a burning bush, or he did it through wind and fire, or by walking on the water. And in each situation, the person that God called felt afraid. But every time that people had said yes to their calling, they experienced the power of God in their lives. So, continues Randy Alcorn, when Jesus came to the disciples on the water, intending to pass them by, he wasn't doing just a neat magic trick. He was revealing his divine presence and power. Only God can do such a thing. He alone treads on the waves of the sea. What Jesus was doing that night was to demonstrate that he is God. What Jesus was doing that night was demonstrating that he has power over all creation, which was made by his hands. And he did it so that the disciples could be left under no illusion about what it was, or who it was that they were serving. And that raises a question in my heart, and maybe in your hearts too. At the start of this new year, I need to ask myself, am I so convinced about who Jesus is that I'm prepared to soften my heart and obey him completely in any circumstance? Or, to put it another way, do I have total faith that the man reported to be walking on the water was really God himself? And it leaves me thinking that maybe my New Year prayer should be, Lord, I do believe, help thou my unbelief.